We actually had to turn down some business last year. Like, I'm able to pick and choose the retailers now that I think will leverage the brand.
Welcome to the Virginia Foodie Podcast, where we lift the lid on the craft food industry and tell the stories behind the good food, good people, and good brands that you know and love. If you've ever come across a yummy food brand and wondered, how did they do that? How did they turn that recipe into a successful business? Then we've got some stories for you. Hi there, foodies. Thanks for tuning in today. I've got a special treat for all those craft food makers and bakers who are dreaming of seeing their products on the grocery shelf. Today, I'm speaking with Leslie Riley, the real Ma Biscuit, the CEO and founder of the gourmet food brand Mama's Biscuits. I first became aware of her years ago when she scored a spot on Walmart's shelves. Since then, I've turned into a true stan, marginally stalking her accounts and cheering her on with every success. And recently, she had some big wins on the retail front, and I thought it would be great to hear straight from her. How did she do that? How did she turn her yummy biscuits into retail success? Listen to her story. She turned out to be as warm and inviting as the Instapics of her biscuits. Hi, Leslie. Thank you for joining me today, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Oh, good. Thank you. I'm so glad you are. Now, I found you a couple years ago just by watching you online and seeing some of your success. But for the listeners who don't know us, could you tell us who you are and the name of your business and the things that you're doing?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My name is Leslie Riley. I am also known as Mama Biscuits. I am the founder and CEO of Mama's Biscuits. I actually make gourmet biscuits, and we make over 50 different flavors of sweet, savory, gluten-free, and vegan. I've been doing this for the last 7 years.
Wow, 7 years and 50 flavors. That's a crazy expansive product line. How do you do that? Like, do you run them all the time or do you do them seasonally?
Yes, they're done seasonally. We have rotating flavors that we do every season. So about 4 times a year, we'll rotate out some flavors and then we'll bring some new ones in. And we usually go by, you know, basically pretty much fall, all things fall. We have a lot of different flavor profiles. So it's really good to be able to showcase those throughout the year. That way people don't get tired of the same old biscuit flavor.
Yeah, flavor variety is always a good way to get people to keep coming back. That's a good strategy there. Well, you came on my radar years ago when I saw that you had some success in Walmart. And that's one of the reasons why I brought you here today, because I saw that you had that great win. And a lot of my clients are looking for that same kind of success. And then recently, I mean, like very recently, I saw that you had a time where you were in Trader Joe's and then now you're in Wegmans. So those are some pretty good successes at the, we're talking now in the summer of 2021, but the last year or so has really been a roller coaster for the food industry. So I'm just curious, like, how has it been? I can tell you've come out with some wins, but how was that past year for you?
The past year has been really, really good for our brand. Prior to last year, I guess prior to COVID, I had made the decision to kind of put the brand on hold a little bit. And then I ended up rebranding the whole company.
Okay.
So in rebranding, that meant packaging, and was trying to look for something that was more appealing, and came up with, I have a really good graphic designer. She's been with me for about 6 years now. And she's amazing. She has a little boutique in Tennessee. And we work really, really well together. So she has been really the brains behind the branding with Mama Biscuit. And when we rebranded, we had already had that meeting with Publix. So we already knew we were going into Publix last year. But I took one Sunday I had taken during COVID. There was a lot of, you know, downtime for a lot of people. So I actually took some free classes that people were offering, a lot of free classes. And one of those was a photography class. because I do pretty much all the photography for Mama Biscuits. And I just wanted to kind of enhance the photography. So on all the packaging, that's all me.
Oh my.
So I decided to take the new packaging that we did. I put it on my deck one Sunday, just snapped a couple pictures and posted it on Instagram. Well, that picture ended up on the Food Network. And it ended up being one of the most 30, I forget how it was phrased. It was like one of the 30 Black-owned brands you must have in your kitchen. Oh. And from there, it just kind of really just took off. I have market reach out. I mean, just everybody reached out. Wegmans, Trader Joe's, a lot of people had reached out at that point. But yeah, it was something as simple as a photo.
Oh my goodness.
Really kind of pushed us to the next level. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, there's so many things in there that I want to unpack a little bit, to use an overused phrase. But first of all, I know that you are CEO of this business, but I also know that you have another career. So you're doing two things at the same time, which I think is insane. And then now to hear that you're your own photographer, like small business owners wear a lot of hats. My goodness, you have a lot on.
We do. We wear many hats. And partly I did the pictures because I didn't want anybody else to own them. I know with a lot of photographers these days, you know, there's contracts out there, and then you have to, you know, they allow you to use the photos for 5 years and you pay for that. But I just kind of wanted to do things on my own terms. And I guess even with the rebranding, that's kind of how I've been doing things on my own terms now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We actually had to turn down some business last year. Like, I'm able to pick and choose the retailers now that I think will leverage the brand. Yeah.
Wow. So actually, that's a smart thing to do regardless of the number of offers that you have, is to kind of know who your best partner is and then look for people who do those things. So that's a pretty smart thing to be doing. The other thing that I wanted to say, you got picked up by the Food Network, but you have sort of a passing history with them or HGTV, is that right? You were in a MasterChef something or other early on before you started?
That was just auditions. The very early on, when I first started Mama Biscuit,
mm-hmm.
I was just kind of basically cooking for friends and family. I used to own a restaurant years ago, and I just kind of would have like Sunday dinners or just get-togethers at my house, and I would cook. And so one day we were just sitting on the deck, and someone said, "Hey, you should try out for MasterChef." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And I did. And, you know, I went to New York and, you know, made it through a couple of rounds, never made it to the television show, got cut. And I was like, oh gosh, I got devastated and was cut. But I had already had the Mama Biscuit page up and they were kind of cheering me along. And it just, I liked the camaraderie. I mean, I loved the fact that they were still supportive, even though, you know, even though I had failed. So, well, I didn't fail in their book, but they were like, "Hey, you know, you did well." And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to keep this going. Somehow I'm going to keep this going. And then, you know, we just ended up, I started showcasing like biscuits. I said, I'm going to have 50 different biscuit flavors by the end of the year. And that's exactly what happened. And then I turned it into an online business.
So when you do those 50 different flavors, where do you find the ingredients that you use? Do you use any local sourcing or unique sourcing or anything
like
that?
We used to use some things from, at the time we were in Frederick, so we used to use things from the Frederick Farmers Market or from local suppliers in Frederick. Not as much anymore. It's hard to do local when you start expanding. A lot of times, though, with the online orders, they're much smaller batches, so I can still use some local things, like honeys, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But when you start, you know, expanding into mass retail, it's really, really hard to use local because a lot of times they can't keep up with the demand.
Yeah, that is one of the pieces of the puzzle that is constantly a back and forth. I was just talking to a farm financial guy the other day, and that's that balance of how do you get farms who can produce the production levels that a manufacturer needs. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's a bit of back and forth there. I'm curious about Trader Joe's as well. Like, that was like a seasonal contract, was that correct? Like your lemon blueberry was in there?
Right. So Trader Joe's came and, you know, we tried a lot of different flavor profiles and they ended up choosing the blueberry lemon to go in as a seasonal item for 12 weeks. but extended a little past 12 weeks because our production schedule, but they were very great in working with us. You will see us again. You will see us back. I love the beauty of Trader Joe's of being able to come in with seasonal items. So they've been great to work with. I mean, they are an amazing team, and how they do it is just beyond me.
And that was under your own brand, right? That was your brand.
That is correct. We were one of the few branded items. That's correct.
Yeah, because they're very, very stingy about bringing other names in because they do so much under the Trader Joe's name. So I was particularly excited when I saw that. I thought, oh, look at you. Look at you getting a good spot.
Yeah, about 80% of their products are private label. But occasionally that you will see, usually like in the health area, like the health food area, more like, you know, like the Kind bars, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. They are usually branded in Trader Joe's or the candy. You may see that branded, but yeah, not too often that they do food products.
No, I thought that was a great win for you. I was over here clapping for you going, you go, that's great. That's great. So I have so many questions now, and I'm going to try and stick to the pattern that we were talking about. I get so excited over these milestones, and I am curious, like, I imagine that you are planning the future to kind of leverage some of these things, right? Like you just spoke to turning down some partnerships. So I imagine, will you be going to purposefully reach out to brands that you think would be good fits?
We have, without me saying, our quarter four this year is huge.
Oh my goodness.
Without me really going into detail. So
you're already on it. You've leveraged some of these.
Yeah. So after our Trader Joe's run, everything now is going to a co-packer. Everything except our online orders and our dry mix that will stay in-house, but everything else is going to a co-packer. And then we've put together an advisory board. There's some big things happening for Mama Biscuit in quarter four.
Oh my goodness. So that's one of the things I was going to ask about was your operations, because I know that you're CEO and I know that you have bakers who have worked for you in the past in a commercial kitchen. I've seen you celebrating those people on your team, and I think that's such a great thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, capacity is a thing. So finding a partner who's going to be able, you know, who owns that big industrial equipment and can be doing those much larger production runs, that's a whole process. Did you find that difficult, or did you do a lot of recipe testing with them? I mean, it's your recipe. So what was the experience like?
Yeah, there's a lot of R&D that goes into that, a lot. I guess at some point I'll talk about that a little bit more, but yes, that's a lot of product that has to be tested and making sure things are correct. And yes.
When you did this new rebranding and you started taking on these bigger clients, my experience in package design is that the packaging starts to become a manufacturing process, right? It has to sort of work with the equipment that you're working with so that you can be the most efficient. Were you making some of those decisions as well?
Absolutely. We actually ended up purchasing a machine from Italy. It's in the process of being shipped here now. And instead of us going to pouches, now we're actually going to film. So we're making our own pouches with the machine, and the machine can actually handle the biscuits. It does pretty much everything for us, because we found that the hand packing, it's a lot. It's a lot of hand packing. I mean, we did Trader Joe's. We handmade over 1 million biscuits and hand packed those. And it was a lot.
Wow.
That so at is some point, you have to make the decision to automate things.
Yeah, that's a lot in labor cost when you're getting up to 1 million biscuits, which kind of starts to eat into the whole margin and profit and marketing spend that you have to do to get into the deal.
That
is
correct.
Yes.
That is absolutely correct. You walk away and you're like, gosh, did I even make any money off of this deal? You know, You think about different things.
So I think that's one of the things that an emerging brand, like, they just don't quite have that in the back of their mind, is that switch from myself to my team to my contractor
And then ultimately, do you own a factory one day? You know, like that's kind of the steps that you have to go through. But there's really a lot of back and forth, like do it, be successful at it, then figure out how to squeeze some more out of that margin.
I do know that a lot of businesses, you know, they want to own their own manufacturing facility. I'm one who does not. So I have no desire. I'm perfectly okay with the co-packer.
Well, that's a lot. It's a lot of different types of people management, right? And equipment management.
It is.
And facility management. Those are a lot of other hats to wear. Speaking as, you know, just in my small business with 8 employees, I had to be IT and HR and trainer and hiring.
Correct.
And when you start adding roles like that, you can't be all those things. So then you're managing managers. So.
And you get it. Yeah. I woke up one day and was like, this is not what I want to do with HR. Yeah. So I was like, yeah. And I just said, you know, that's when I started sourcing co-packers because I realized that, you know, it was bigger than me at that point.
Oh, yeah. And what you are is you own that brand. It's your brand, right? So you own that. And the rest of the things that go into getting that out the door are things where you can find experts to do those things for you. That's a big light bulb moment for you is to figure that out. Because I think many small businesses begin to drown in the day-to-day. And it's hard to keep that brand excitement, wrestle with all those other things that you have to do. So good on you. I become like your super cheerleader today.
But you're absolutely right. Like you're one of the few people that get it, you know, from a CEO standpoint. And even a lot of CEOs have a hard time getting it. And you're right, that light bulb, you have to have that light bulb moment as a founder, as a CEO, and be like, okay, I would rather this go out and me drum up more business or, you know, find where you really kind of take it back to in the beginning, what you really liked about the brand, because it does, it gets lost. And you're kind of like, oh gosh, I didn't sign up for this. It's not what I want to do. And, you know, I mean, it is your brand and you kind of wear many hats, but at 7 years later, when you're starting to get into more major stores, you're like, okay, I can't still be wearing these same hats.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I have to make some decisions. And I'm kind of happy because I love making the online orders. That's where I was passionate because it allowed me to be more creative.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask you about creativity because your decision that you mentioned earlier about photography, just as a side note, there are ways to get just to own your photographs outright. Lots of corporations do that. And it's because they don't want the hassle to have to keep track of 5 years. That's a big like admin function. But your decision to like take on your photography and to get better at it sounds like that's a creative thing that you enjoy. So that's okay to keep that piece of it.
So in with the me sourcing photographers too, it was because I had so many different flavors. So that starts to get pricey when I told them, okay, we have to do 10 photo shoots of 10 different flavors. And it was just 10. And, you know, the quote that I got was just astronomical. And I was just like, oh, I'm not paying that, you know. I'll figure it out. I Googled how to do a white box and I was outside on my deck about 9:20 when the sun was shining right in the morning. And yeah, so, I mean, it's hilarious, but yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you know, we did it.
You did it. Well, I'm going to ask you, you don't need to reveal any like new things by this, but I'm going to ask you, like, what's next for you? Are you, in general terms, what are new flavors or new things that just the general shopper might expect from Mama's Biscuits?
We have some new things coming out on the market for fall. So you'll see some of those flavors in some stores.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we do have our vegan line, and that took off really well. We are the only certified vegan biscuit on the market.
Oh.
So yeah, so that's been really great to launch that.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some other product lines. they were always in the works. When you probably, you may have seen little things about them on our social media pages. We just never really pushed them, but those are coming to market as well. So, and of course, we finally got the dry mix out. That's in over 258 world markets nationwide.
Oh.
So yeah, that's out. And we have a lot of new things on the horizon.
Oh, that's exciting. Those all sound really interesting. I'm going to ask just of a particular interest. I saw that you had gluten-free. Do you offer a gluten-free line or?
You know, we did. And that's, to go back to your question, we did use a local miller for our gluten-free flour. The commercial off-the-shelf brand, you can tell a difference. You can taste the difference. We used to get a lot of people that say, oh, wow, these taste amazing. And that's because we use, you know, the miller used to mill the flour for us once a week, every Monday. So I'm hoping to get back to doing gluten-free, but just on a very limited basis. Mm-hmm. We stopped doing it because the facility we were in, we had manufactured so much non-gluten-free that it was just, you know, impossible to kind of run the line of gluten. So now, because we're on a smaller scale now, we can go back to running that gluten-free line. So yeah, I would see that probably on our online stores, like towards the holidays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, so that's probably another advantage of this co-packer relationship is that now you've got someone to do volume and now you can go back to craft runs with your smaller team. Mm-hmm. That is so interesting. Well, I have to tell you, like, this was, I'm so glad that we connected and had this conversation because there's, you've had so much success in this that I know people are going to want to hear about that. Before we go, do you have any other things that you might want to share or things that would be of interest to other brands who are looking to have the kind of success that you've had?
No, I mean, I would just tell them, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And the break will come, and it's okay if you hear no, you know, if the company tells you no, not right now, you know, just keep checking back. Keep checking back every year and just don't stop because eventually they'll come around. It's ironic because a lot of the no's we heard early on are a lot of the yeses now. So, or they're searching you out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a couple of the retailers had came back around, which I was actually surprised, but yeah, so I wouldn't just, sometimes you can go into spaces too early.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just not the right time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that those early no's were probably because they didn't think that you were ready. Like a smart retailer wants a partner who's going to be there for the life of the relationship. And they're looking at small businesses and like, are they ready for me to take a bet on, right?
Right. And then you have some early yeses too. So, and that's when I talked about a little bit about some of your failures. Some of the retailers said yes, and they didn't do well in the stores because of, and again, I would say it was more of a branding thing for us. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to know your product. So I think it was, but I think the fact that when we rebranded, it made things a lot better. There was more clarity about the brand. Because early on when I was in one of the retailers, they had me in a bunch of different areas. I was in bakery, I was in grab and go, I was in deli. I was just kind of all over the place in different stores.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, and we had some brand identities. And then when I actually stopped and said, you know what, this is going to be strictly frozen. And then that's when, you know, I was able to command that where the brand was going to go.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing, like a smart specialty brand knows where they play the best and will tell their retail partner, like, we do better here. You know, I was talking to a snack brand and they said, we're not like the snack aisle. We need to be over in deli because we go with wine and cheese and deli events. We're not going to do well if you put us in there next to the potato chips. And it's like, oh, that's a smart thing to do. And if you can't get that kind of buy-in from your partner, then they're probably not the right partner for you right now.
Right.
It's like, well, you're going to be disappointed. You're going to order and then they're not going to move. And those are the kinds of stories that I'm always coaching my brands to, like, you know what works, right? You know it. You don't have to grab everything. You grab the things that fit your brand. Well, again, I don't want to keep you for forever and ever. I mean, I have so many questions I could ask you off and on, but I'm going to let you go. But before we leave, can you share with listeners like where they can find you, how they can buy you online, and all those great things?
Sure. Our online store, I think we're going to open it back up August 1st. We have August 1st right now, but you can find us at www.mamabiscuits.com. Instagram, I think we're under Mama's Biscuits, Mama_Biscuit.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with Facebook. It's Mama's with apostrophe S Biscuit. You can find us. So you can find us on all the social media outlets. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter as well as Pinterest.
And we can find your mix in World Market, and we can find some flavors or flavor in Wegmans and anywhere else shoppers might go.
Publix. Yeah. Wegmans, Publix. There's still some left at Trader Joe's right now. And then look for us and a couple more retailers towards the end of the year.
That is great. I'm so happy for your success. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. I enjoyed it so much.
Thanks for listening. And if you want to learn more about how to grow your own food brand, then click on Grow My Brand at vafoodie.com. If you're a lover of local food, then be sure to follow us. We are at VA Foodie on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Join the conversation and tell us about your adventures with good food, good people, and good brands.